We're looking back through the week as we recall the events of September 11, 2001, and the ubiquitous question, where were you on 9/11? Franklin County Sheriff A.J. Smith, he'll be with me along with Lieutenant Tony Drzewicki, Leon County Sheriff's Office, and Deputy Chief Rich Jones. He's here, too, to talk about Tallahassee Fire Department and all of those first responders. You stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done. Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widden Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widden Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widden Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widden's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widden Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widden's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widden Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widden is known for taking care of business. Widden Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
So here we are again, my dear friend, and glad you've joined me in this next 2 hours. We call Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat, Tallahassee's radio station. This is the sound of Tallahassee, playing all of the local artists and their original songs from great lineup of music, great artists, bringing you the sound of Tallahassee on Moose Magnificat, our own internet-based radio station, online at moosemagnificat.com. And you may be listening to Tallahassee Talks and the sound of my voice just that way. You can download the app if you go to moosemagnificat.com. Go to the listen page and you'll see the buttons there for you to download either to your Android or your Apple. The app is pretty nifty, tidy, efficient. Get to request songs too. If you want to place a request, you can do that. It's kind of cool, and we love doing it. We love celebrating what is Tallahassee musically as well as culturally across the way, and who we are, let's say, in terms of our own politics and our civic resources, social services, athletics, entertainment. We are a community that is emerging. Without exaggeration, we are seeing the birth of, or the unfolding of, the new Tallahassee. More inclusive, more cooperative, more exploratory, more diverse, by all means. And that diversity showing up in all kinds of ways, across all kinds of lines, you'd say. Income, occupation, education, ethnicity, and race, gender. Man, it's just, it's exciting. It's a cool thing. And part of that is our Tallahassee Family Magazine bringing you more and more of what Tallahassee is all about. It's published quarterly. Current edition is on newsstands around the community. You can find it there. The online version is remarkable, I'll say. Easy to navigate. So if you want to go online, tfmmagazine.com. And that little thing is getting something like 800 hits a day. Wow. So a lot of people finding out more about what makes Tallahassee such a very cool place. People like you. You're cool. And that coolness shows up in all kinds of ways. can happen when you are contributing to something that is useful for the rest of us, whether it's in business or some volunteerism, some charity that you're involved in. We're going to make our contribution coming up on the 29th in a special way. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny presenting the all-team, all-American tailgate party. Yes. And I'll pay for the food. You come and have fun with me at the Four Points by Sheraton Hotel, downtown Tallahassee, Saturday the 29th from 8:30 to 11:30. We will be broadcasting during that time live from Four Points Hotel. And we'll have lots of prizes and giveaways, and we've got special guests lined up for you. I'll have a conversation with Coach Bobby Bowden, the legend. And let's see, we'll have our own sports analyst, Tim Linnefelt, with courtesy of Seminoles.com, and sports radio host Jim McNeil, Bobby Mack. Trying to get Jeff Cameron to be a part of that for us. That guy stays pretty busy, so it's tough with Jeff, but we'll do our best. It'll be a lot of fun. You need to come out and be a part of this thing. $5 at the door helps me help Second Harvest Food Charity. So if you can afford the $5 at the door, that goes toward helping us pay the light bill there, and then we take the proceeds following expenses and donate all that money to America's Second Harvest of the Big Bend, or just Second Harvest. They like that better now. All of this being brought to you by Gain Street Pies and Super Signs, Tasty Pastry Bakery and Truck and Car Concepts, Wooden Glass, Sellers Tile, Southern Smiles, Family Dentistry with Dr. Eve James. They're all making this happen for you. And our very own Tallahassee Family Magazine also. In cooperation with Real Talk Radio 93.3, ESPN Tallahassee 97.9, Moose Magnificat Radio, and our good friends at Four Points Hotel, Beth Roden and company over there. So that's kind of a cool thing. Again, the 29th of this month, that's 2 weeks from today. Come on down to the Sheraton. Doors open at 8:30. Be a part of the studio audience. And if you have a question or two, you can pose for our guest. That'd be great. Talk sports, talk college football. Remember, this is all team. So if you're a Gator or a Tiger or a Seminole or a Bulldog or a Rattler or any other creature, we don't care. Well, we care, but you're invited. We want everybody there. All team, all American tailgate party, courtesy of all of these fine sponsors and your very own Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. So that's coming up. What else? Oh, two, you want to make sure that you continue to say your prayers for our dear neighbors to the north. Sharon Tyler, the head of Big Bend Red Cross, is already up there. We're going to talk a little bit about this with some of our guests today, how this community comes together around common issues, and so many communities around the country that don't isolate themselves from one another. They see a need and they rush to the cause of helping. They do whatever they have to do. So God bless Sharon Tyler for being up there and trying to support and help representing Big Bend Red Cross on our behalf. And all of you who have contributed in some fashion, whether you're on site or maybe you're making donations to the Red Cross or other organizations to lend help, it's certainly going to need our help, and probably for some time. We'll continue to keep an eye on that. We do our part here in trying to keep us all prepared for severe weather by bringing you TallahasseePrepared.com. It's a website that has a lot of good information. In fact, if you'll go to Facebook, and we'll make sure this is up on the website as well, there's an article out of Axios this morning talking about why Florence particularly is so unusual and potentially so damaging. It's a very unusual set of circumstances that make Florence even more dangerous, even though it has been downgraded to a Category 2, or was earlier in the week. Nonetheless, the flooding, the surge, it's all formidable. Folks, you stay with me. We're going to continue this here fine radio show, courtesy of our sponsors, Wooden Glass and Merry Maids and all the others who make this possible every week. Right along with you. Thanks for being here. We'll be right back. I want to take just a minute and tell you about Chelsea Salon. They are the official hair care salon and spa for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. And yes, this is how I am able to bring to you my very best every week. Because, though you can't see me, I know whether I'm at my best, and I need all the help that I can get. So when I go over to see Mary Fannin and her crew, they are proficient in everything they do. Wow. Well, I don't think there's anything that has to do with my personal look and feel that they don't do. Here's one review I read recently. This is a guy here in Tallahassee. He says, I am so happy I found this place, having just moved from Orlando, where I had a wonderful stylist for 15 years. Chelsea is the bomb. Well, there you go, guys. So it's not just for the ladies. Check it out this week. Chelsea Salon and Spa, the official hair care and salon stylists for Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time again, my sports fans, for another edition of the Linnefeld Sports Report. I want to get your thoughts and just your observations, I guess, as to how everything felt from the end of that game going through the week. I mean, there had to be a deep sobering going on.
Yeah, that's probably a good word. You know what was unique about it, Brian, was that you really didn't have a lot of time to dwell on it, because that game was played on a Monday and they played again on a Saturday. So, you know, you play until late on Monday night, after midnight. You have a day to rest and recover on Tuesday. You practice Wednesday and Thursday, and then you turn around and there's another game right there. So I don't think the team really had a lot of time to feel sorry for itself or lick its wounds. I also don't think it had a ton of time to get adequately prepared for a Samford team that I think is probably a little bit better than most people would want to give them credit for, which I understand. Look, it's been a weird, 10 days or so since 12 days since that season opener. I think for the fan base, perceptions surrounding this season have probably shifted a little bit. But then also, I think that this game against Syracuse that's coming up in a little while here, it's really, I think, an important game. Probably has more significance attached to it than we would have anticipated when the schedule was announced, or even 2 weeks ago. Sure. Syracuse traditionally isn't one of the more powerful teams in the ACC. I think Florida State's won like 10 straight games against them, I think is what it is. But I think this game, to me, will be a pretty strong indicator, because, Syracuse is – they're good enough to beat you if you don't play well. You know, they have a senior quarterback, a four-year starter. You're playing up there. It's a noon game, which can kind of do weird things to teams on the road in terms of, energy and atmosphere and all that kind of stuff. I'm really intrigued to see what happens. And one more point I want to make before we ask your next question is that, football coaches across America, they love to say, and I think there's evidence to bear this out, that teams typically, they make their biggest jump, they make their most progress between week one and week two. And Florida State essentially played two games in week one. So my question is, will we see that kind of week one to week two jump today against Syracuse? Yeah. I think the optimistic outlook is that you will, and we'll see.
You said that if you don't play well, Syracuse can come up and beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the sentiment among a lot of folks. The loss was painful enough, but more so the play, the way that Florida State was playing, left a lot of people very, very unhappy.
Yeah, it was a little disjointed.
On both sides of the ball, and couldn't seem to find any resource or any place you looked, whether it was a quarterback who just seemed like he had lost that touch. He was he wasn't scrambling like we were used to seeing last year. So we're still back where we were a few days ago when we played the Hokies.
Yeah, I thought the quarterback played pretty well, DeAndre Francois. I thought he was good against Virginia Tech, and even more so against Samford. And I thought the defense, I thought, played well against Virginia Tech. I don't think they were the problem. And then there were some issues certainly against Samford. But by and large, they cleaned those up in the second half. I think kind of what you're touching on, I think the biggest issue is particularly on offense, just in terms of, you know, not getting into rhythm, not playing. Willie Taggart likes to use the term a clean game, meaning you know, no silly penalties, all that kind of stuff. And they haven't been able to avoid that yet. And I think, look, there's no offense in the country that can handle a lot of penalties and drops and all that kind of stuff. But this one in particular, I think, is really reliant on getting into a rhythm, getting, you know, letting one play build after the other, and setting the defense up, you know, play one to play five, that sort of thing. And when you're not able to get into that rhythm and get the defense on their heels, it can be a pretty uphill climb. I mean, this is an offense that's not built for second and long, third and long. You know, it has to sort of stay on schedule. And once you get that ball rolling, it's kind of like an avalanche. It just keeps on going.
Keeps moving.
But if you can't get it rolling, it's tough.
When you think of Jimbo Fisher's style and Taggart's style, do you have a characterization there? How do you compare them?
They're different for sure. You know, I would take exception to the idea that Jimbo was this tight-laced, you know, military general who had everybody, you know, up at the crack of dawn or what have you. I think a lot of the thought and the chatter about, you know, discipline and accountability and whatever else, I think those were things that needed to be renovated from the previous staff. I think most people would probably tell you that. And you know, you heard a lot of Willie Taggart talk this summer about, you know, changing the culture and establishing that accountability and that discipline. But, you know, you can't just always speak that into existence. You know what I mean? That has to come through experience.
One sports writer wrote the idea that Taggart inherited a team that was broken in half. You know, that there were parts of the, you know, two parts of the, and they just didn't hang out with each other. So he spent the summer trying to say we are one team here.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, it's never easier to do that than in June. You know what I'm saying? But when you get to the middle of the second quarter and you're down two touchdowns to Virginia Tech or whatever the case may be, you know, your first human nature is to go back to what you're used to. And so that, I think, is the challenge that he and this program I think are going to face. You know, today and then also for the rest of the season. I have no, and I don't think anybody reasonable, you know, long term, I think it's too early to say and too soon to use these two or three games as a referendum on the big picture. But I think, you know, it's it's going to take a while to build that foundation back.
Lastly, Taggart, he's definitely had to accommodate the fact that Florida State, while we love him, we think he's a great guy, we want to know if he's a great coach. So he's got that now in front of him. Have you noticed changes in his approach? Is he still as open-handed as he was when you first met him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's a pretty cool customer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And one of the things that you know, if you look at his resume, going into struggling programs and rebuilding that foundation and getting them cleaned up and in good shape has kind of been his MO. He did it at Western Kentucky, his alma mater. He did it at the University of South Florida, and he was only at the University of Oregon for a year, but they made positive strides in his 1 year there. And so, you know, in a sense, this kind of really isn't anything new for him. Now, what is new and what is different is the setting, the place. You know, with all due respect to all those places, including the University of Oregon, none of those have the spotlight and the pressure and the expectations of being at Florida State. So the idea is, you know, the stakes are a little bit higher now.
Right.
But I think the process overall is probably the same, and his track record suggests, by and large, that he can get it done.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate you being here. The Linnefelt Sports Report, courtesy of Seminoles.com. Our good friend Tim Linnefelt, always on the ball. You stay with me. We've got more coming up.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic. You know, something clever. But that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The mission of the Franklin County Sheriff's Office is to create a safer Franklin County by reducing crime, ensuring the safety of our citizens and visitors, with commitment to making our community a better place to live, work, and visit. That by way of Sheriff AJ Tony Smith. He's our guest this morning. Hello, sir.
Hey, brother. How are you doing?
Nice to see you again.
Thanks to see you.
We were much younger when we first met.
Yeah.
And I know you were better looking. I think I've always been stuck with what I've got here. I don't think it changes much.
It's all relative, man. It's like, hey, what they say, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
Indeed. Thank God.
Exactly.
It seems to me from your beginnings as sheriff, you've been trying to be a bit more transparent, more interactive, more engaged with the community.
Correct.
How's that going?
I think it's going well. We have a lot of people that come to our Facebook every day, probably hourly, looking to see what's going on, whether who's arrested, what kind of events are occurring, where we've been, what the deputies are doing. You know, we try to post a couple of things a day about what's going on. Like this morning, I stopped at a local business in East Point, and a young man, probably 6 years old, was with his dad there for work, and I gave him a little badge. You know, his dad brought him in, not to meet me, but to talk to the manager of the office, and he introduced him to me, said, here's the sheriff's son, and he shook my hand, young man shook my hand, and so then they went outside, and I got ready to, you know, did my business and talking to folks, and I was getting ready to get in the car, and I saw him, so I called him over, and I said, would your son like a small badge? I have these little badge pins, and he's like, oh, yeah, he'd love one, so.
There you go.
Put the pin on him, took a picture with him, and put it on Facebook, and, you know, and he said, you know, he really wants to be a deputy when he grows up.
Interesting.
And I'm like, you know, so such a cool interaction, and so we're able, with the social media, to share it with an unlimited amount of people. Hey, you know, is it a big thing? Well, who knows? Because to this child,
sure enough,
he's like, well, I've got something from. I can remember the first time I got a badge that a law enforcement officer gave me a badge. I mean, it was like I never forgot it. And so those things sometimes go a long way.
You don't know, and those multiple number of moments through the course of the day, through the weeks, through the years.
Right.
You build up then a kind of relationship, and this is something that I know local law enforcement here in Tallahassee has been trying to do, and a lot of law enforcement agencies around the country have been trying to be more plugged in and, if you can say this, put a little different face on law enforcement. Do you struggle as a department with the same kinds of issues that Leon County does, pretty much?
I think every agency has some like issues. Bigger cities may have more of them. We have fewer of them, but it's just like when I was elected. Let me back up. The tendency for a lot of agencies has been to go to the militaristic look, outer vest, cargo pants, you know, the BDUs, and
ready for battle.
Right. And I think that's, and you know, there may be some cops out there disagreeing, but I like the idea of the traditional green uniform. You look like a law enforcement officer instead of a, you know, a SWAT guy. We have our SWAT guys when we need them, and they're in the back. But we have a uniform that everybody can identify with. It's soft, but still, they have all the tools on their gun belt. They have their body armor. They have everything they need, but still it's a softer look and a more approachable look, and that's what I wanted to give the community as sheriff of Franklin County, an approachable, more comfortable, relaxed look
so
for
that
the deputies.
So I look at you and go, okay, he's here to help me, not
hurt me. Exactly, because I tell people that You know, 5% of our job is putting people in jail, and 95% is helping people, whether it's a flat tire, whether it's to go check on their elderly parents who live alone, or whatever it is. That's, you know, that's kind of, that's the way I see it.
Well, and in keeping with some of your mentality, you've brought this to our attention even in this moment. That has not been the PR side, we'll say, the front end of law enforcement. It hasn't really been the concern of a lot of agencies, I think, because we kind of all just felt like, yeah, they're doing their job.
Right.
But a lot of negative press has come in the last 5 years or better.
Right.
And so is that a response then from law enforcement to say, well, time out, wait a minute, or is it really more about we have all these tools available to us? You mentioned social media.
Well, I think everything has its cycle. You know, whether it's clothes, you know.
Fashion trends.
But 30 years ago, there was a two-button suit. Then you went, you know, things changed, and there were three-button suits. Now they're back to two-button suits.
You know, so it's a question of style.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying it's just everything is, I think, is cyclical. And, you know, whether it's the way law enforcement reacts, you know, years ago everybody wore the same uniform. And, you know, now we have militaristic uniforms. We have, you know, the regular traditional what a lot of deputies wear. So things change, and
we're sitting here on the week in a retrospective. We look back at 9/11, that was this last Tuesday, and think about how that, as a cataclysmic event culturally, certainly it had all kinds of implications for law enforcement, but I think it turned the culture in a direction that said, law enforcement, first responders, firefighters really are our heroes. They are the folks that run into a burning building when the chances of them getting out. In that case,
they're running in when everybody's running out. I mean,
we're zero to none. And and how has that then turned, you think, the community that you serve in your direction to say, hey, well, wait a minute.
Well, you know, I think it's a couple of things. And one, I'm fortunate that I'm the sheriff in a fairly small county, and just about everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. So that has its advantages as compared to a city like, you know, county like Leon, where there's hundreds of thousands of people and everybody doesn't know everybody. And and plus it's a huge melting pot here with the universities and, you know, all the different people that are coming here. So I think we kind of have an advantage because we do. We know everybody, or the majority of people, and we're able to.
How did 9/11 change you?
Well, you know, I can remember the morning, and I've seen a lot of people talk about, you know, they'll never forget where they were. And I'm probably the same way as you are, but I was the chief of law enforcement for the Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco here in Tallahassee, and I was in my office and had a TV on the wall, because usually, you know, monitor the weather.
Yep.
News and stuff like that, and it was on a news channel, and saw the first plane hit, and I was like, I just kind of shook. I said, no, this can't be real. There's no way this is real, you know. And it actually just kind of, you're just kind of like, and you just have no reaction almost. It's like, what, this can't be real. Then when you see the second plane and you find out that there are other planes and you see what's going on, it really made you think about what was happening in the country and where were we going.
The magnitude of it all.
And as you saw the day progress and all the destruction and all the death and what the people were dealing with in New York City, it was just like, it was very surreal. And I remember a lot of the staff in the office just crowded in my office, because I think it was, the director had a TV and I think I did. And so everybody was just like, with their, you know, mouth wide open. Oh my gosh, you know, what is going on?
Astounding how it is that events of that nature, and I mean at that scale, that are unprecedented. You and I sat there along with the rest of the world going, I have never seen that before.
Right.
And your brain is trying to process.
It cannot compute what you're seeing.
Is this somehow a simulation? Am I seeing real life? It's when the Challenger blew up. You just stared at the screen and thought, that's impossible. That could not have happened, but it happened.
Right. And, you know, I remember a lot of things about that day. You know, President Bush was in Florida.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people knew that. And then, you know, they were going to him. And I think everybody was in total disbelief, total Remarkable. Shock.
And hard to believe it's been 17 years.
That's one of the hardest things that I mean. that I think about is like, it has been 17 years and it feels like it was yesterday.
Just yesterday.
And I can only imagine how the people that have relatives that they lost or, you know, something like that, how they must feel, you know, because I'm sure right. I saw the TSA put a video out yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was a quite compelling video.
I did see it.
Of a lot of the phone calls from the airplanes, people were making their loved ones, and the air traffic controllers.
Remarkable.
And it's just like, wow, you know.
Yep, talking with Tony Smith here. He's the sheriff, a new sheriff in town over there in Franklin County. We're glad to have him with us this morning. You stay with me. I'm going to have some more conversation with this young man. I think we'll learn a lot. Be right back. Is there anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town, kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale, just tasty pastry good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? You know, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back. We're talking with Sheriff Smith, known to his friends as AJ, known to his closer friends as Tony, and trying to do the right thing over there for all the good people in Franklin County, which is, I mean, that's a mixed bag, too. You talked earlier about being rather close-knit, and the fact is you've got a lot of diversity even that way up and down the coastline, and that's, for you, I suppose, a kind of... how is that for you, I guess? When you think of the kinds of folks that you are serving and the variety of lifestyles, I mean, guys that are oystermen out there and people that are retailers and...
Well, you know,
it's a very diverse sort
it is, you know,
of environment.
And we're, you know, we've seen the economy change over the years. You know, seafood was king for a long, long time, and now it's not what it used to be, which where I grew up in 2 Mile, which is 2 miles west of Apalachicola. People say, where's 2 Mile? Well, it's 2 miles from Apalachicola. And it was totally seafood. And all along the waterfront there, which is along the bay, there were oyster houses and shrimp boats. And, you know, and
for everyone that's open, there's two that have closed.
Well, there's only two open now. I mean, most of them have closed. And it's really sad to see it because it was such a thriving waterfront. And then even in downtown Apalachicola, same way, shrimp boats from the bridge all the way, you know, for a mile down the water.
And I know that's a complex issue. I mean, in terms of environmental issues, the impact of.
But right, so now we're tourist driven. We have thousands of tourists every, which we're thankful for because it sustains our economy.
Yeah.
And
coming through. Yeah.
And most of those folks, they come there, they enjoy our beaches and our shops and stores and stuff like that.
A1
and restaurants.
Beaches, man.
Yeah. And then. Worldwide. And then they're gone, yeah. So, I mean, it's it's a good thing for us that we have that.
If you think back, and then, I started to ask you this question about Franklin County and the kinds of issues you deal with. We talked in the prior segment about the surreal aspects of the attack on the World Trade Center 17 years ago. Here you are in Franklin County, one of the most beautiful environments in the world.
True.
And you end up with a frickin' wildfire that destroys how many homes?
Over 30,
I mean, so there's your little mini World Trade Center catastrophe going on right in your front yard.
Yeah.
Tell us about that experience for you.
Well, again, typically when you have a catastrophic event, it happens very quickly. as we saw with 9/11, I mean, in a matter of minutes, it was over. I mean, before you could really even comprehend, it was over. Same way with the, you know, the fire we had in East Point. I mean, it was, I've compared it to some of the fires out west, how quickly they move, that you, they're moving so quickly you can't get out of the way. And that's what we saw that day. And the fire was moving so quickly that people were fleeing their homes with nothing but the clothes on their back because it was, you know, moving so quickly and so intense. And we called every deputy we had out to come and help us evacuate. I mean, it was just a, it was literally just a matter of minutes. It changed direction in just a 5 minutes and was heading in a totally different direction. You know, we were watching it 1 minute, the next minute we were evacuating people. So, it was probably one of the, well, we've had a couple of small storms since I've been sheriff. Of course, I have been through some hurricanes down there, but it was the most catastrophic event, one single event like that I've had.
I know you've had a tremendous outpouring from local community to try to help repopulate, help people out, getting back into their homes.
Well, you know, that
couple of churches that have actually purchased homes.
Yeah, I had two churches here, in Good Shepherd and Reverend Holmes Church, purchased each one of them, purchased
Bethel,
a home.
Yeah.
And, of course, had the local churches. Oh. Actually, Church of God in East Point stepped up as a staging area and a shelter for people the night of.
Wow.
And so, you know, it's just really, it's really kind of cool to see everybody come together, and even when there's no plan, for a lot of the other people that get involved and help. And that's the same way, I'm sure, in New York when it happened, that they had people from, I know people from all over the country went there to volunteer and help and do the things. And that's the great thing about the country we live in. That's why, even though with our problems, we're still the greatest country in the world. And, you know, we had, last year, you know, we had Irma, Hurricane Irma, and then we had the one in Texas. And we actually, I tell people this, that I felt, and I know that's what people felt for us, but I felt so touched and wanting to help the people in Texas when that hurricane went in there. Remember all the destruction they had there?
Horrible.
And I'm like, what can we do?
Yeah.
And so we reached out to our local community, and we wound up with 4 tractor trailer loads of goods and about $10,000 in cash. And we took it to, I didn't know a sheriff in Texas, and I just picked one on the coast that had been impacted. And
remarkable.
And we went there, and we took him all this stuff, and he was like, wow.
You know, it's astounding to me. Here's a little kid who you hand a plastic sheriff's badge, and you say, you know what? You're one of us. I'm one of I'm one of you. We all are together in this thing.
That's true.
That's got to feel pretty good.
No, that's, I mean, those, interacting with the public, and just, that's the best part of the job. I mean, and doing things for, I mean, you know, locking somebody up is not fun. And, but it's, you know, part of the business, and you got to do it when it's necessary. But I mean, the, you know, the best part of the job is coming together and doing, and having the authority and the wherewithal to, just like the, like we said, the sheriffs in the county we helped in Texas. And then right after that, we went to Monroe County and helped the sheriff in Monroe County, took him goods. And I like to think that, because we did it not expecting anything in return. We just said, hey, we want to help. The people in Franklin County said, hey, let's help. Let's all work together. And we did. And then, you know, 8 months later, we have a huge disaster. And what happened? People from all over the country. Somebody sent us like 10 microwaves. I don't even know who they were, from somewhere out west. I walked in the office. There's the boxes. I said, what is all this in the hall? They're like, somebody sent microwaves. So, I mean, people, the outpouring was tremendous. And stuff's still coming, and it's, and I'm sure, you know, that's probably, I think, the hardest thing. There's a lot of people, I see a lot of people that want to help. They just need somebody to put, show them the direction to go in. You know, a lot of people, there were people that called us all, hey, what can we do? Where do we need to go? And once you kind of get them directed, they're there, because there's
that's
so many
cool,
people
man.
That want to help. And it's really a good feeling to know that people are helping. That
it's a good feeling for me, and I think for all of us listening, that you're on the job and your folks are there, the entire bureau of the department, to point us in the right direction.
Well, you know, that we're blessed with a lot of good men and women everywhere in this country that put on a uniform every morning, whether it's a firefighter, EMT, a sheriff's deputy, police officer, military. I mean, these people serve. And that's what I tell the folks that work at the sheriff's office. If you don't want to serve other people, you're in the wrong job.
Yeah.
You need to find a new job. And I don't have a problem telling them that. I tell my staff that quite frequently when somebody is not doing right. I'm like, look, if you don't want to serve, this is not the job to be in. Go get a job somewhere else. Be
Take
a computer
off the
program.
Pads, get off the field, man. This is the NFL.
That's it. Understood. We're here to serve people, whether they're rich, poor, black, white. I mean, that's our job.
Folks, this is why we love this guy. AJ, Sheriff Tony Smith. He is sheriff of Franklin County and a good friend of many, a friend of this show. Sheriff, thanks for being our guest this morning.
No, man, thank you. And again, thank you to all the folks in Tallahassee that came out to help us. I mean, City of Tallahassee sent their heavy equipment to clear sites where homes have been destroyed. I mean, just, you know, I can't say enough about our friends here and in other parts that really, really stepped up. So
very cool.
And I know this isn't about that, but I want to, you know, while I have the opportunity,
give them a shout out.
No,
absolutely.
It is. It's amazing what you know, Reverend Holmes and the folks at Good Shepherd and City of Tallahassee, and then a lot of just individuals that said, hey, you know what, you're our neighbor, we want to do something. They wrote checks. They did things. So
thanks,
great.
Sheriff.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Anytime.
Stay with me, folks. I got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny at Gain Street Pies. Their sauce is no secret. In fact, just about everybody knows their imported San Marzano pizza sauce has made them famous. Two Tallahassee guys wanting to make the best pizza in town. They mashed flavors together that had never been seen on a pizza before, and they just kept working until they had the very best. Using all fresh ingredients, real sliced bacon, fresh-made ranch, and homemade meatballs. Recipe by recipe. So, less than a year later, they opened Midtown Pies on 5th Avenue in Midtown. Now they're opening their third location on Capitol Circle Northeast at Easterwood. Two guys who got famous by making great pizza with San Marzano sauce and the best ingredients. And made it great for all of us who really want the best pizza in town. Check it out. Gain Street Pies, now with three locations. Who knows? Maybe you'll get famous. Online at GainStreetPies.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We are back and glad that you're a part of this here fine radio show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat every week, reaching out across the way to show off the things that make Tallahassee very special. Glad that you're a part of it. You know that you can go to the website, TallahasseeTalks.com. All of the broadcasts are there archived just for you. So if you go to the archive page, you can go to that most recent, or you can search for one that you've missed. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, and thereby you are updated from week to week automatically on your device, your cell phone, or whatever it is that you like. So it's kind of cool, and it's broadcast on 93.3 FM here in Tallahassee, along with Moose Magnificat, Saturday mornings at 9. We do a repeat play on Saturday evening at 9.30, and again on Wednesday afternoon at 5.30 on Moose. So there you go. Lots of ways that you can participate in this grand experiment that I present as evidence, Tallahassee Community Chorus, that has toured about the world and has represented us well musically. How about the Mag Lab contributing sizably to our understanding of magnetics in very general terms, the world of physics, electromagnetics and such, right? Well, of course, yeah, then there's the major universities, FAMU, Tallahassee Community College, and Florida State University, their contributions, that's remarkable. And you can't forget football. I mean, my goodness. I mean, Florida State football, FAMU football. Anyway, I just think that we have a lot to be grateful for. And among those blessings, we have Sheriff A.J. Smith. He's sheriff of Franklin County. He's going to be with us here in this hour. We're looking back through the week, and we remember the events of 9/11. 17 years ago. Remarkable. So it seemed important to us enough that we should bring to you then those who were then involved in law enforcement or fire prevention and suppression people who were first responders in general, we'll say. So I've got A.J. Smith, Franklin County Sheriff, and then Lieutenant Tony Drzewicki. He'll be with me. He's with Leon County Sheriff's Office. And he's been with Leon County Sheriff for 26 years. So very clearly, these folks remember exactly where they were, what they were doing. They're going to tell us in their own words. And part of that questioning has to do with how we're different as a culture, as a country, as a community. And how has that changed for those in law enforcement, fire prevention, fire suppression? How have those who are professionals looking out for our welfare changed the way they do business? So that's all part of the conversation up ahead. I think you'll find it illuminating and inspiring. It's remarkable in my mind how those kinds of events, for my father's generation, largely it was Pearl Harbor. You know, he was Master Sergeant, a warrant officer with United States Army. I said Master Sergeant. He was actually a warrant officer in charge of communications. He was responsible for laying telephone lines all up and down the West Coast. Spent a good deal of time in Hawaii following the attack on Pearl Harbor. But I remember as a kid, I mean, December 7th would come along and he would always tear up in recalling those events and the friends of his who were lost and others who served alongside of him. And this is a guy who came to America as a kid. He was 8 years old when he was brought here by his father to Chicago from Sweden, grew up on the South Side, and joined the National Guard when he was 17. And quite a story. He did what so many people did in that generation. They saw America as a refuge, and my dad particularly saw America as his surrogate mom. He really felt that strongly. So on December 7th, I mean, we would watch, the war movies or the news reports that were the vintage news of the era, and he was always quite tearful about all that, very, very emotional about the whole thing. And that was for then. And yet now, in our generation, we have 9/11. It is a pivotal moment, a seminal event, we would say. And I pause to think that perhaps what we see in the current political fray, the discussions of late, over the last several years, we'll say the last 2 or 3 years, as vehement as people are in their opinions, I beg the question, did a lot of that begin with the attack on the Twin Towers on 9/11 17 years ago? Well, in other words, what is it that gave rise to the kind of sentiment that says we have to hang together, and whereby nationalism has become a resurgent way of thinking? You know, it was prominent back in the 30s and in the 40s. Nationalism was strong. I wonder, too, if, in fact, we live at a time when that particular event or events like that leave us all feeling vulnerable, threatened, and what our responses are then to that perceived threat. In fact, you can't argue the notion that it has changed how we see ourselves and how we see the world. I think that's a fair claim or assertion. I think at the same time, we have to ask ourselves, how do we best prepare for, how do we best incorporate the events as they occurred and allow ourselves to maintain a kind of open-mindedness. Does that make sense? Rather than trying to shield ourselves from outsiders, how do we bravely stand vigilant, prepared for anyone who might try to attack us, But at that same time, we remain hopeful and we remain open and open-handed about wanting to include others in our sphere. I mean, I'm just not a big fan of us wrapping ourselves up in the flag and shutting everybody else out of the conversation. I just don't think that's how it works. I mean, you know, I ask the question, since when has our discourse, our national discourse, ever been civil? You know, the difference now is that we all have a microphone. You know, you get to the point where you start looking back through our annals of cultural change, social change. We're deeply divided. We have always been a deeply divided nation, and we like that. We prefer that, because it's in that division that we are forced to contest ideas one to another. And we believe in something bigger, something stronger, something loftier, something bigger than ourselves, certainly bigger than the sum of our parts, where we decide which ideas are worth keeping and which are not. They're just not useful, or they're not consistent with what we know ourselves to be. You stay with me.
The holidays are coming. Well, in a few months, and that's why now is the time to shower up with a beautiful custom bath or shower enclosure from Widden Glass. Don't wait for the holiday rush. Widden Glass will take care of you this summer to your complete satisfaction. They've been helping to design and install bath and shower enclosures for Tallahassee homeowners for over 70 years. When you call Widden Glass, you're dealing with real glass people, experienced, reliable professionals. Widden's top-of-the-line bath and shower enclosures provide style and luxury at an affordable price. With the holidays coming, that means family, and that means now is the time to shower up with style.
Call today, Widden Glass, the real glass people, 222-5781, or online at widdenglass.com, W-H-I-D-D-O-N. Widden, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945, 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
So in keeping with our retrospective on the events surrounding 9/11/2001, we have invited several folks to join us. We have with us this morning Deputy Chief of Tallahassee Fire Department, Richard Jones. How are you, sir?
Good, sir. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here.
Yes, sir.
We're going to just jump right in here with this. Where were you?
Well, it's a funny story, Brian. I was working in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I came to Tallahassee from. I was actually on duty at my fire station. I moved to Virginia from the northern New Jersey, New York area, so I was a buff, so to speak, and I was listening to FDNY on the computer when the first tower was struck. So it definitely is something I will never forget, you know, in my whole lifetime of where I was when it happened.
We've talked about this. The perspective you have and had then as a firefighter, different than the general public, do you think?
Yeah, I would say so, because, you know, of course, you and I, both being Americans and citizens, would think, okay, our country was under attack or a accident occurred. But on the other side, you know, other perspective is that, you know, I knew that my brothers in the fire service, the men and women that were running into those towers to save lives with no due regard for their safety or their lives and worried about them and not knowing what was going to happen next, because there were so many unknowns, because one plane hit, a second plane hit the Pentagon, and you just didn't know what was going on.
When those kinds of moments happen for us collectively, do you see a rallying? Is there a kind of coming together that is notable for you?
Well, you know, you can see it locally in the Tallahassee-Leon community or across this country. When someone is affected, the rest of us, you know, don't say it's not our problem. We say, what can we do to help? What can we send? Or the number of people. Mm-hmm. You know, for instance, in the Tallahassee area, if the Carolinas are gravely affected by this. We have USAR urban search and rescue teams right. that are at the ready to be deployed. And, you know, America is a country that, you know, we may not live in a certain area or know those people, but we're going to jump in and help. And that's what we do. We are a resilient nation, Brian. And, you know, when we get knocked down, we brush ourselves off, we get up, or we help our neighbor get up and help those people move on. And that's what we do as a country. Mm-hmm. And I think the one thing that I think 9/11 did for our country is that it strengthened us in the fact of we could show you can knock us down. You bloodied our nose, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We wiped ourselves off. We got up and we're resilient and we came back.
And as a department, TFD made changes, did they not?
Absolutely. It's changed the fire service in this country as a whole, Brian, where, you know, before the fire stations were left open 24 hours, you know, and now people are making attacks on fire stations or on police officers or EMS workers or, you know, those folks or dispatch agencies. So, yes, the heightened security has changed us and our awareness, so to speak. I know I've been in the fire service for 33 years, and it's definitely changed the fire service in this country as a whole. Yes, sir.
In what way? Your practices perhaps have changed. How has it affected you mentally, do you think? Do you kind of, are you looking over your shoulder a bit more, or maybe you're watching the other guy's back a little bit more?
I would say both of those things. Yeah. You're very, very attentive and keen to your surroundings, yeah. Your awareness, your situational awareness of who's there, who's around, what can happen. So, yeah, it definitely has made us be more vigilant on certain types of calls or all calls and really, you know, just making sure that we're keeping safe. And in the fire service, we like to use the expression, everyone goes home. And that's something that we really want to make sure that everyone goes home, not only the firefighters, but all the civilians as well.
Right. You have to imagine the unimaginable and then prepare for that inevitability as if it were likely to happen, right?
Well, yeah, you could, the expression, Brian, I'm sure the listeners out there have heard, you plan for the worst and hope for the best. So if you train for the worst possible scenario and that doesn't come, then you're more than ready and equipped and ready to handle it. And the training we do, you know, we've done more with hazmat and hazardous materials and dealing with, you know, if we had certain situations and you know, with explosive devices or anything like that. So it's changed the type of training we do, where before it was just going in to put out residential fires, where we've kind of broadened our horizon, so to speak.
You watch the videos from those hours that passed on the morning of 9/11 in the faces of firefighters, law enforcement, EMTs. They're looking up at those buildings, and you can see the disbelief and the frustration, because everything in them is saying, I gotta help them, but there's nothing to be done. What can we do to put that fire out? And yet these guys are throwing, you know, air tanks on their backs and hiking up the stairs, and everybody else trying to get out of the building. There's the unimaginable. Nobody could that morning thought these buildings are coming down. Nobody. And that in and of itself was that unimaginable circumstance. Now, I guess we don't make that assumption anymore.
No, we don't, Brian. And the two things I'd like to if from a personal standpoint to your listeners are, you know, number one, those men and women for, you know, FDNY, the police department, the Port Authority, EMS, they all went to work that day and didn't have any idea of the horrific events that were going to take place. And coming full circle with your theme of the show and talking to those guys and knowing a lot of people from up that way, the biggest thing that bothered them was that there was people they couldn't help, those people that were forced to jump to their death because they had no other choice. Mm-hmm. And the fact that there was people they just couldn't save, because as firefighters, you know, we're going to save everyone or die trying. That's what we do. That's where we are with our careers. And the fact that, you know, to look in these guys' eyes and see the hurt and you know, that they couldn't help some of these people, that was the biggest thing, the ones who did survive. And, of course, the brothers and sisters they did lose.
Sure. The ones who are much younger than you and I, who may not have been much more than toddlers, I mean, 17 years ago, what do you say to them? What do you do, and what do you say to help them appreciate the magnitude of how that changed us? Or is that even possible?
I think it is. I think the phrase that is, you know, put with 9/11 is never forget. And I think to teach our young people that our country is vulnerable at any time. Anything can happen. Don't say it can't happen in Tallahassee or Leon County. Terrorism can happen anywhere, anytime. And we need to remember these heroes and these folks that gave their lives to save thousands. There was thousands of people in both those towers that day. And the men and women of FDNY and the police department and the Port Authority and EMS, they got all those people out. It could have been so much worse than it was. Not saying it wasn't horrific, because it was. It was the worst day in the history of the fire service. But, you know, it could have been a whole lot worse, but lives were saved, and you know, these firefighters made the ultimate sacrifice.
He's in charge of planning and logistics for the Tallahassee Fire Department. Deputy Chief Richard Jones, our guest this morning. Thanks, Chief. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me, Brian. Anytime.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
In keeping with our observances this Saturday, we look back on the week. I have with me Lieutenant Tony Drzwicki, who is a 26-year member of Leon County Sheriff's Office, lifelong Tallahassee native, graduate of Barry University, Miami Shores, Florida, and studied at TCC, Law Enforcement Applied Science. Guy's been on the job, uniform patrol assignments, including field training officer, promoted to sergeant, watch commander, field training program commander. So let's welcome Tony to our show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me today.
And by your permission, I'm going to refer to you by your first name.
Just call me Tony.
Because, you know, we just appreciate the fact that you, a part of that in this day and age that we live has to do with how law enforcement is perceived.
Absolutely. That, you know, I think that's the biggest bullet.
The new weaponry out there is how you show up in the nightly news, kind of stuff.
It is
the 24-hour news, for that matter.
You know, mentioning that, you know, we train one way, and when you talk about training for officer safety, you almost want to intentionally leave out the perception part, because you don't want a deputy or a police officer to hesitate when action needs to be taken, because they're doing some sort of equation of, I know this is the right thing, but how is it going to look? And you know, and in that hesitation, they become injured, or somebody else becomes injured. Then the reality is, afterwards, the perception of the event is the primary judging public judgment
of the personnel involved, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, the personnel, the profession, the agency, and you know, then you rely on you know, state attorney, grand juries. If I don't know the context of what it feels like to be aware that my contact with somebody could end badly every time, but I have to push that in the back of my head, right?
It has
to be there, but if I carry that in front of me, then I never...
It's paralyzing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I never do good.
Looking back, we mentioned 9/11, those who were on the job that day, especially firefighters, right? But law enforcement included. had never encountered anything of this nature. None of us had ever seen anything of this nature.
It is astonishing, because I will tell you, I remember exactly where I was at. I was 31 years old, and that day I was interviewing for a assignment with the hostage negotiation team. And I was
With
Leon County Sheriff's Office. Yeah. It's a extra duty that you do on top of your primary duty.
Wow.
And myself and Sergeant Melinda McBride, we were both interviewing that day. Huh. And we were on the second floor of the sheriff's office. And back then, you know, we had one of those big TVs on a rolling stand.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the only TV on the floor. And we started hearing that there's something going on at the Twin Towers. And, of course, everybody, you know, starts gravitating towards the TV. And it's, you see the plane crashed into it. And we're looking at each other, and I can remember us even saying, you know, I wonder if some guidance system went out, and, you know, there was
right.
some
couldn't
beacon.
Have been intentional.
Right, right. Some beacon somewhere, and they're on autopilot, and this is some technology fluke or something like that.
Mm.
And, of course, then the second plane hit, and then, you know, we realized we were seeing something that we had never saw before. There's this theory called Black Swan. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but you know, what Black Swan is from a preparedness standpoint, take something you've never seen before, but you can imagine it, and say, how would you respond to this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and especially like in movies and things like that, you look at it and you say, you know, this is Hollywood at its best, right?
Sure.
Then you ask yourself, you know, is it plausible? You know, and then you say, well, you know, we haven't trained for anything like this. Mm-hmm. So it's called a black swan exercise. You take something that you would say, look, Tony, the chances of this happening are one in a million. But it's not really training for that event that is the purpose of the training.
Yeah, yeah.
It's saying, are we capable of responding to something that we've never seen before? And we want to prepare. But like you said, it was amazing. You know, these firefighters, think how quickly they had never imagined anything like this. Mm. The officers that ran into the building, you've got to wonder, did some of them think, this is just a fire out of control?
Indeed. And their black swan was the building collapsing on them. So it's one thing to say, hey, there's a fire up there. Man,
right.
this is perilous. I've never seen this before. But then to say, and by the way, folks, this
right.
massive structure is going to be particles within the hour.
Think about it. Yeah, I mean, the Twin Towers, the reason it was attacked was because it was a symbol of strength, right?
Yep.
So it's also a symbol of physical strength for us. It's taken, you know, this two planes in it, but now we need to get up there and, you know, get these people out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you think about it, again, the heroism, the bravery of they didn't know what they were going into. It's just...
Yeah, and if we bring that home for your sake, you've been with Sheriff's Office now for 30-plus years, is that right? 26 years. Well, you're a lot younger looking than I imagine. Bring it home. Are there the things in that, you know, quarter of a century that you have experienced this that the department has had to say, okay, never have seen that before, didn't see that coming, and then you've had to adjust. Now, for Sheriff Smith down there in Franklin County, it turned out to be an East Point fire that nobody could have imagined would have taken 30 homes in a very short period of time.
Right.
So for the county, I'm wondering, for Leon County Sheriff's Office, what that is.
So, you know, post 9/11, we all had to open up our skill set books again. You know, we had to say, what is the job of law enforcement? We knew it had to change. And one of the interesting things that happened immediately after the media was covering in real time the rescue operations, we were getting calls from local media. What are you doing here? Mm. And at first, it's we ask ourselves, what do you mean, what are we doing here? Mm. This is, you know, this is up in New York. I mean, we don't have any information or anything like that.
Except for the fact the president's brother
well,
sitting over here.
You know, so then you think, and it's amazing that you said that. Well, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush lives here, and he works in the tallest building in Leon County, and as the bird flies,
yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
It's 3 miles from the airport.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Now, surrounding that with police officers, is that going to stop, you know,
yeah.
the threat that we were seeing?
Sure.
You know, putting a helicopter up there, you know, and the, you know, in that case, it was, you know what, let's start moving non-essential people out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at the sheriff's office in the beginning, again, we weren't sure what to do.
I still remember seeing Air Force circling the Capitol for some period of time.
Absolutely.
Following me, just on patrol, saying, not on our watch kind of attitude. Folks, I've got Lieutenant Tony Driswicki. He's kindly agreed to be a part of this retrospective on 9/11 and the good folks there at Leon County Sheriff's Department. You stay with me. We've got more right after this. Is there anything more Tallahassee than Tasty Pastry Bakery? More fresh, more original, more this is why I love this town, kind of delicious? I don't think so. You know, they've been in business since 1963, working through the night to be ready the next morning with muffins, coffee cakes, bread and pastries, and my personal favorite, fresh-made bagels and Lucky Goat coffee. Yeah, it helps get me out in the morning. And they deliver to the many restaurants, clubs, and coffee shops that serve their bread, muffins, and quiche. Never stuffy, never stale, just Tasty Pastry good. It's the perfect blend of world-class talent, pure, simple ingredients, and down-home Tallahassee family tradition. Maybe they should call it Tasty Tally Bakery, but then why mess with something that's been working for 55 years? You know, you want something fresh and fantastic? There's a Tasty Pastry just waiting for you in the Market District on Market Street, 6:45 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday. You want to know more? They're online at tastypastrybakery.com or call them at 893-3752.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with Lieutenant Tony Driswicki, who kindly enough has brought us up to date on some things with Leon County Sheriff's Office. And Tony, we were talking about the manner in which these cataclysmic events come our way. In our time, you and I sitting here today, we're having to rethink what it means to be a patriot.
You know, and I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm curious, you know, because I asked myself this. Is there a difference between patriotism and nationalism for you, you know? And I think it's because I asked this question because it seems like Europe seems to be struggling with this issue right now of, you know, this nationalism where once, you know, open borders come, you know, and bring your families, but assimilate, right? And, you know, you mentioned your dad was from...
He was from Sweden.
From Sweden. And, you know, the Swiss, the Norwegians, Scandinavians, you know, they're dealing with these issues right now of... nationalism versus, you know, patriotism. And, you know, I see patriotism as exactly, you know, respecting the symbols of our country. Because those symbols, you know, they represent our forefathers who fought, who died, or who just went out west and built, you know, this country.
Sure.
And so for me, I'm torn because I feel it's my patriotic duty to stand up and say, I'm an American, and that these symbols represent my country. And,
right.
But then when I turn to my neighbor or a member of my community, and they say, unfortunately, less respectfully these days, but they say, well, Tony, they were fighting for my right to not salute the flag and not stand up for it or to take a knee, and I'm going to exercise that right. What are your thoughts on that? I'm curious.
I find that discussion in any 24-hour cycle to be the most provocative for me. It is the most, academically, it's the most curious for me, because I think that our country has never been anything but deeply divided over all kinds of issues. And if we want to pick on probably the most seminal, it would be racism and slavery,
Absolutely.
Which from our foundation was in fact preserved because Thomas Jefferson was told, we're not signing this thing, Southern states saying, we're not doing this if you don't remove that from the Declaration of Independence. So we carried that level of divisiveness within our being going forward and said, okay, we will survive in spite of it.
And on top of it, so they use, Thomas Jefferson uses a legal term, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when he says we're all created equal,
mm-hmm.
all doesn't mean every human, right? What they make a legal definition,
right?
Purposefully that, that blacks would not. We're not talking about blacks in this document,
right? Because they're not human.
Well,
and I mean,
to
honestly,
them,
the
to
belief,
them, they're property.
Right.
Right. But when you read it, it seems so enlightened, right?
Yeah.
But then you have to see the context behind it, and it is an enlightened document. But, but then it causes us.
I think to your question about nationalism, patriotism. For me, patriotism is recognizing e pluribus unum, that we are united in the midst of all of this plurality. And in fact, that is the way we like it. We are not particularly comfortable with equating unity with uniformity. So nationalism for me is a sort of subset of that, or maybe even entirely different than that, when it comes to what it is that you're willing to fight for. You know, I'm willing to fight for your right to disagree with me. To me, that's a patriot idea that is embedded in our national identity, right? So nationalism is, I'm going to fight to defend what I believe.
Right.
And maybe that, in some way, is the difference. I just think that the only difference now in our discourse, because it's always been as uncivil, is just now we all have a microphone, and it's called the internet.
Well, and you know what? Going back to 9/11 and social media, remember, there was no Facebook, there was no social media presence, and even with the terrorists that carried it out, their propaganda was limited by back then conventional communication.
Right,
they weren't. Their message was filtered through third parties, media outlets, and things like that, to where, you fast forward today, they can take a smaller event, a smaller deadly event with loss of life, but then they are able to maximize that propaganda, and they can remind the world whenever they want that, chlorine gas was used in Syria, and we're responsible for this. And or we say the other side's responsible for this. And so think, 17 years difference.
Sure enough.
So imagine if in 9/11, if the propaganda machine had been in place,
to the degree that it is now.
Right. And, I mean, you know, the damage to our psyche was, well, we're still healing from it. You know, I don't really ever think, I don't think if you have any conscious memory of it that you'll actually, you know, heal in certain ways. But if you were to take, you know, the social media that we have today and put it back in there, then it turns into this whole other thing.
He is Lieutenant Tony Drzewicki with Leon County Sheriff's Office, our guest this morning. Learning a lot as we go through the 2 hours of this here fine radio show about what 9/11 means to each of us as we reflect upon 17 years ago this week when the Twin Towers were attacked. We find ourselves in this time, as you say, Tony, from a distance, still trying to recover, still trying to rethink how that affects us going forward. Thanks for your thoughts. Thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Folks, that's what I've got for you this week. Appreciate you being a part of the show. We are glad to bring this to you every week here. We are the production of Alcom Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat. You'll find us online at moosemagnificat.com. All local musicians playing their original songs. That's Moose Magnificat. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee. Come talk to me. At Gain Street Pies, their sauce is no secret. In fact, just about everybody knows their imported San Marzano pizza sauce has made them famous. Two Tallahassee guys wanting to make the best pizza in town. They mashed flavors together that had never been seen on a pizza before, and they just kept working until they had the very best. Using all fresh ingredients, real sliced bacon, fresh-made ranch, and homemade meatballs, recipe by recipe. So, less than a year later, they opened Midtown Pies on Fifth Avenue in Midtown. Now they're opening their third location on Capitol Circle Northeast at Easterwood. Two guys who got famous by making great pizza with San Marzano sauce and the best ingredients, and made it great for all of us who really want the best pizza in town. Check it out. Gain Street Pies, now with three locations. Who knows? Maybe you'll get famous. Online at GainStreetPies.com.